Hello everyone, I'm Amanda Balby, Managing Editor at Consultant360.com. It is estimated that 3 to 4 million Americans have chronic hepatitis C virus, or HCV, infection. The risk of infection is highest among the homeless, incarcerated individuals, and those who inject drugs. Despite this statistic, the vast majority of people who inject drugs are not engaging with treatment options. A recent study co-authored by Drs. Stephen Gonzalez, Daniel Fear, and Andrew Talal explores the medical and behavioral approaches to engaging people who inject drugs and care for HCV infection. Thank you for joining me today, doctors.
It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you.
So let's start by discussing your research, which was divided into a few sections. Dr. Gonzalez, let's start with section one. Evolution of HCV infection. How have treatment options changed over the years?
Well, what we have now is the product of over 25 years of evolving therapies for Hep C, and that began with interferon alpha therapy, but that was a treatment that was met with a lot of challenges in achieving high efficacy, and the treated patients endured many side effects and a prolonged course of treatment for up to a year in many cases. But this was followed by major breakthroughs in the development of antiviral therapy over the last 3 years, involving what are known as direct-acting antiviral agents and therapy, which is involving now all oral regimens without the use of interferon. And this form of therapy is capable of treating all genotypes of Hep C with over 95% efficacy after only an 8 to 12-week regimen in most cases. And this treatment is curative, and eradication can be achieved, in which there is no longer detectable virus in the patient after completing a successful course of therapy.
What do these changes mean for people with substance use disorders?
Well, treatment that we have now is much, much more effective, and it's a shorter duration. And it has a high tolerability with essentially no side effects. And that means no exacerbation of mental health conditions, which was the case with interferon therapy in the past. And there are also no interactions with opioid replacement therapy, such as methadone or buprenorphine.
What barriers to treatment do people with HCV and substance use disorders face?
A major barrier that continues to exist right now is the cost, and that combined with a high prevalence of patients who are uninsured, who have substance use disorders. But that is improving, and another area that is a barrier is the stigma associated with Hep C. And with efforts towards education in the general population and within high-risk communities, we're hopeful that these barriers will improve over time.
What role does the government or governmental organizations play in treatment access?
Well, they have a major role in identifying trends and the populations at risk, and that includes surveillance programs by, for example, the Center for Disease Control, in identifying vulnerable populations and geographic areas that are at risk of outbreaks. The federal government has increased funding for syringe service programs, which provide support to services including needle exchange programs and hepatitis C testing and linkage to care. And one other organization involves the National Viral Hepatitis Action Plan, which has provided a roadmap and guidance in achieving long-term goals such as viral elimination.
Do you think the trend in U.S. healthcare is going in the right direction? If not, what do you think needs to be done?
I think it is moving in the right direction, but what needs to be done is involve not just the federal government, but state and local governments, as well as communities and the private sector. And what can be done is to help improving access to care, particularly in this high-risk population.
Dr. Fear, what are your thoughts on this?
The trend in American healthcare started going in the right direction for the first time in decades since Medicare and Medicaid and the Johnson administration, during the early years of the Obama administration, when we expanded health care to tens of millions of people in most states in this country. This improved services mostly to the neediest and most vulnerable, those who are poor, especially in states that adopted the Medicaid expansion. This was an enormous boon to people with substance use, with especially narcotics addiction and mental illness, ultimately to people with hepatitis C. This was enormously important in our ability to treat hepatitis C, even though many states in this country still have onerous and medically unjustifiable, of course, restrictions on hepatitis C treatment. Without the Affordable Care Act, we would have had paltry response, and it would have been significant and devastatingly worse. Since that time, in the last approximate year, there is now the crusade in the federal government to eliminate the Affordable Care Act, which, of course, was occurring before but was going to be ineffective while Obama was still in office. This is a disaster to our ability to take care of the neediest, most disenfranchised, ultimately then the sickest people, including those who have currently become narcotics addicted due to the prescription narcotics and the transition into heroin and fentanyl and the disasters we've seen with drug overdose and addiction, hepatitis C infection, and HIV infection. The Affordable Care Act carries funding for mental health to poor people who would not otherwise be able to pay for that, and for addiction treatment, including narcotics addiction. It's not currently adequate. It's certainly not adequate in the states that didn't adopt the Medicaid expansion, and these states are, and then not surprisingly in a sense, the ones that are hardest hit with this narcotic epidemic, the hepatitis C and HIV epidemic following on its heels. Just point out here, too, that the hepatitis C always precedes an injection epidemic, precedes HIV, but the attention really only came to these areas when they got HIV, but about approximately an order of magnitude more people had hepatitis C, and it's been going on for much longer. The best thing that could be done to fight the narcotics epidemic is to expand and beef up the Affordable Care Act, which is the only existing substantial way to pay for this addiction. So the noise that's being made to support those in the epidemic has been really just a lot of light and no heat, and that if you really care about taking care of these people, you'd actually fund the health care and not just declaring an emergency or urgency, which carries no funding and only could possibly result in diversion of already impoverished state Medicaid services from one desperately in need program to another desperately in need program. What we need is an expansion of the existing infrastructure. The ideas of what would be substituted to pay for it are just in statement only and are substantively completely incorrect and would not actually help, and would in fact the current direction in American healthcare being attempted by the current administration is really a road to disaster.
We will now move on to Section 2, Goals of Interventions to End the HCV Epidemic. Dr. Fear, men who have sex with men, or MSM, are a high-risk group for transmission of HCV and HIV. What are some interventions or treatments currently being evolved to target MSM?
Well, to start, for HIV-infected MSM, we do not have a straightforward idea, or did not have a straightforward idea, of how they acquired hepatitis C, while this was much clearer among people who inject drugs. And although the HIV-infected men very frequently reported significant drug use, the type and flavor of drug use was really quite different. Specifically, they were really rarely injecting drugs. In addition, since we understand the roots of sexual transmission of hepatitis C poorly, in fact, it was considered to pretty much not happen, certainly among heterosexuals, we didn't have many ideas of how these infections were transmitted. So the first approach has been to look at behavioral studies. The Dutch did a very interesting thing and used their study as a basis for developing a risk score that found that there was a pretty good correlation in the risk scores between them, and so decided that this was a valid instrument that could be used with six questions that could be easily asked at a, for instance, a sexually transmitted infection clinic, a place that's not used to seeing people with hepatitis C. They then have used this as a basis for a couple of different interventions in Amsterdam. One is in an attempt to try to eliminate hepatitis C in Amsterdam. They have made the HIV-infected MSM epidemic a top priority, as they have largely solved their transmission among injection drug users, as have many in Western Europe. They then have suggested to some of the clinics to use this questionnaire and suggest Hep C screening. But they have also done a pilot study, they're starting a pilot study, where they will offer this questionnaire online and suggest that then have a high risk score. They'll be given specific suggestions as how to decrease perhaps the specific risks that they've reported. In addition to the counseling, are going to offer a test kit where they can use using a finger stick will put a little blood on some filter paper and send it to a central lab for hepatitis C testing for virus, and hoping that this will pick up infections earlier and then can be referred to treatment earlier in an attempt then to interrupt further transmissions from people who didn't know they had it. That these combined interventions could decrease and, you know, ultimately to the eradication of hepatitis C they're starting with Amsterdam.
HCV-HIV co-infection rates among MSM have reached epidemic proportions. How can treatment options or interventional programs help target this population?
Another important approach to decreasing the what appears to be the expanding epidemic of hepatitis C among HIV-infected MSM and now possibly HIV-uninfected MSM is to use treatment as prevention. And there's two aspects of that that we need to think about. One is treating the prevalent cases, that is those who have chronic hepatitis C, and that's been largely the goal of the treatment of baby boomers, for instance, to find those who have hepatitis C that are known and treat them. Then there is treating the people who are newly infected. And so those who have chronic hepatitis C among HIV-infected people in general have been treated at a pretty high rate. My goal has been to find the newly infected people as soon as possible after infection and to treat them as soon as possible. And this has developed, in my mind, in practice over time when we started not that many years ago with using interferon and ribavirin solely as treatment. And while getting people on treatment relatively early was a good idea, the treatments were toxic enough so that we gave, say, a few months of observation because about 15% of men spontaneously cleared, and although that's actually a very small proportion, given the toxicity of 6 months to a year of interferon ribavirin, it's felt overall that that might be a safer alternative. With the availability of the new, or really the first availability of the direct-acting antiviral, I had done a study and some others have done it afterwards, adding one of these drugs to interferon and ribavirin got a much higher cure rate, although not 100%, with a shorter duration of treatment. And at that point, I started suggesting that we treat earlier and look harder to find men because it was quite effective, although a fairly toxic regimen. But more recently, now in the modern age, we use the sofosbuvir-lidipasvir combination to in treatment with just 8 weeks has given us a complete success.
What is the next step in addressing treatment options for MSM who may be part of the disenfranchised population?
Disenfranchisement from society and medical care is, of course, an important problem in stigmatized groups, and this has been true with injection drug users, but it's also been true historically for men who have sex with men. And this is particularly true in a number of racial and ethnic communities in the U.S. The hepatitis C carries, in some ways, an even larger stigma now than HIV does. HIV certainly had a horrific stigma before effective treatment. So it's actually quite almost shocking that hepatitis C is an incredibly easily now curable infection. So this needs to be addressed as a societal issue. If there's less stigma about hepatitis C, there would be less of a problem with people being willing to consider that they could be participating in activities that would be transmitting or acquiring hepatitis C and also being willing to come in to get treated. So this applies to MSM as well. Fortunately, among HIV-infected MSM, a large proportion of those who have known HIV infection are in care in this country. We've made quite a push to get people into care as soon as they're diagnosed. I think we need to bring what we have learned from HIV prevention into the Hep C prevention among MSM, thinking about stigma and access.
How has research helped healthcare in the United States better understand the treatment options and support systems that MSM need?
Well, the research on HIV transmission has been absolutely crucial to our understanding of preventive and treatment methods throughout the decades. The AIDS Clinical Trials Group and just innumerable organizations have been essential to getting the science basis, including randomized studies, for improving healthcare in these groups. We know less about hepatitis C and these same kind of interventions, but I have sort of worn my HIV hat in thinking about interventions and thinking about ways to do this in hepatitis C as well. There's some really innovative ideas that are still being, of course, investigated for HIV because we still have an expanding epidemic of HIV in certain among the most vulnerable. One of the things I would note, though, is that in early, perhaps over-optimism about the end of hepatitis C that I have encountered, which is that with the availability of this really low toxicity and highly effective curative treatment for hepatitis C, there is in this almost incredibly sudden loss of interest in investigation of transmission mechanisms or really much at all on hepatitis C, that in some, you know, and this is perpetrated by the medical and research community already by themselves, so they're shrugging and saying, well, we solved the hepatitis C problem. But in fact, we haven't solved it at all. That the World Health Organization just announced we've treated about 1.5 million out of, say, 67 million cases of hepatitis C worldwide, say, approximately. We really don't know how many there are, but as a very back of the envelope, and that we're miles behind any sort of eradication goal that the WHO set, for instance, for 2030, and that we really have no idea how to get people found, diagnosed, and treated in many or most cases. We also don't know enough about how to prevent new infections. And so I think we have to be very careful about declaring hepatitis C dead enormously prematurely.
Now let's move on to section 3, models of HCV treatment delivery to marginalized and disenfranchised persons with substance use disorders. Dr. Talal, what patient population would you consider to be marginalized or disenfranchised?
So within the group of patients we commonly refer to as persons with substance use disorders, and this is really the general category for those individuals who abuse substances, there are various subpopulations. it's really a heterogeneous group of patients and can be grouped into those who are former users, those who are in recovery, i.e. treatment, as well as those who are actively injecting. And I would argue that those who are active injectors are really the ones who are the most disenfranchised and thereby likely the most difficult to engage into treatment for substance use disorders and hepatitis C.
And how can healthcare providers better engage their patients with coexisting substance use disorders and HCV infection?
Well, the healthcare provider really plays a phenomenal role, particularly those who are on the front lines. One role that they can play is by asking the patients whether they've been tested for hepatitis C. As we all know, many individuals who are infected may not even realize that they have hepatitis C. The second approach is to address the issue of which disease to treat first, the substance use disorder or the hepatitis C. And I really believe that this requires an individualization depending upon where the patient is psychologically as well as geographically. Many patients feel stigmatized for what they've done in the past, either that they've acquired hepatitis C or that they've abused substances. A discussion with a healthcare provider can begin the process of addressing that stigmatization and can play an extremely important role in motivating the patient to proceed to treatment of both or either one of these two conditions.
And if there is no specialist in the area, such as the case in rural areas, how can first-line healthcare providers manage both substance use disorders and HCV?
There are really two issues that need to be addressed, and one is the issue of expanding the number of providers, and both for substance use disorders as well as for hepatitis C. The second is the geographic barriers or segmentation that exist in the treatment of both of these conditions. There are various programs that have been addressing both of these issues. In other words, several states are attempting to liberalize or to facilitate prescribing of buprenorphine or expand the number of healthcare providers who are able to prescribe hepatitis C treatment.
What role does telehealth or telemedicine play in treating patients with HCV and substance use disorders, especially those in rural areas or those who are disenfranchised or marginalized?
So telehealth can be used to address the physician shortage, not only in rural or among marginalized or disenfranchised populations, but really the goal would be that telehealth or practices become part of the everyday delivery of clinical medicine. There are various programs that are addressing this. For example, I'm the principal investigator on a study sponsored by the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute that is addressing the use of telemedicine as a way to treat hepatitis C at 12 methadone programs throughout New York State. There are also telementoring programs such as Project Echo that seek to increase physician knowledge about a whole variety of different disorders, including both treatment of substance use disorders as well as hepatitis C.
So I think what we've discovered is treatment of one of these conditions goes hand in hand with the other, as well as integrated care improves outcomes of both. So what services can be developed in these areas to expand treatment availability?
There are a variety of different models that are currently being explored. These include such things as mobile vans that can circulate and can offer treatment, expansion of existing services and providers who can prescribe, such as nurses, pharmacists, and physician extenders. I should add that nurses and pharmacists, these models have had more applicability outside the United States, in Australia and in Europe, as opposed to the United States. think really the bottom line is that we need to expand the number of treatment providers and to develop innovative models to engage persons with substance use disorders into treatment for both hepatitis C as well as into treatment for substance use if they're not yet receiving such treatment.
And now let's discuss the final section, Section 4, Support Services to Promote Persons with Substance Use Disorders Engagement into Care for HCV Infection. Dr. Talal, how are current HCV support services lacking?
So one of the most important considerations is where the treatment for hepatitis C is going to be delivered. If it's delivered in a conventional clinic, many of the support services that one would find in a substance use treatment program may not be available. These would include counseling, social work, nursing, behavioral health, as well as obviously treatment for substance use itself. Some of these are offered in facilities such as those that receive Ryan White funding and offer HIV treatment.
How can current support services be improved to better provide HCV treatment to patients infected with HCV who are substance users?
So I think there are two important steps here. One is the expansion of such services, as we've discussed, which obviously is going to require resources, which may not be feasible in the current environment. The other is individualization of such services. So if, for example, limited number of social workers are available or limited number of social work services, identifying those patients who can best utilize such services is really a very important step in terms of being able to improve access to support services.
What are the next steps for evolving the current services and treatment options?
Fundamentally, we need more research into different models of care. The question is, what model works in what situation? And a follow-on question is, what patient should be approached for which model? We need answers to those questions in order to optimally and effectively deal with this problem. The other important aspect is education, and it's very important that we provide education in two fundamental areas. One, that interferon is no longer part of the therapeutic regimen for hepatitis C. And number two is that HCV is a curable disease. And so treatment, 8 to 12 weeks of treatment in the vast majority of patients will result in a cure. Similarly, one needs to, particularly in the area of substance users, make sure that they understand that they can be reinfected. And so harm reduction becomes a crucial step. A third component is dealing with the stigmatization. And as I mentioned in the preceding section, many substance users have stigmatization regarding prior injection or drug use history, as well as simply by the fact that they acquired HCV, which they attribute as a consequence of substance use. And so addressing the stigmatization, helping patients move beyond that to a place where they can begin to contemplate therapy is extremely important.
Are there any challenges or barriers to improving current support services?
Well, the population is sometimes difficult to engage, and I found through speaking with many different individuals, many of whom are attempting to engage this population, that engagement may not always be proceeding correctly. So many of engagements require face-to-face interactions. It's important that patients be considered as advocates themselves for treatment. In other words, if you have patients who are able to speak about the treatment they've received and how they've proceeded, that can be phenomenally important in terms of moving treatment forward.
What role do primary care providers play in engaging patients with HCV who are substance users?
I think primary care providers can play a phenomenal role in the engagement of patients. as we discussed early on in this podcast, awareness of the infection is a paramount fact that patients need to discover if they are infected and are unaware. A second one is education. As I mentioned, the fact that interferon is no longer part of the treatment regimen and the fact that the disease is curable. These are two very important and very fundamental new pieces of knowledge that it is extremely important that patients understand. The primary care provider can be an extremely important conduit or bridge to expanding that knowledge, identifying infected patients, and providing the care that they need.
Dr. Gonzalez, what would you say your overall takeaway from this research is? What message do you want to get across to our listeners and your readers?
Sure. I think what we really want to do is highlight the importance of hepatitis C and the fact that this is an infection that can be cured, that even though the substance use population can be challenging in terms of access, that there are models by which we can have access to this population to begin to identify patients who are at risk and who have hepatitis C, and then start looking at ways that we can treat these patients. And it can have a major impact on their overall health and achieve long-term goals, such as viral elimination, as I mentioned.